morning, everybody. Yeah, I did that on purpose. Mike on the mic here. What are you laughing at me or with me, Les?
Oh, only with you. All right, well, I don't have any courage.
Good answer. Mike on the mic here with Les Hurwitz and Mark Hurwitz. Morning, everybody.
Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
How are you?
Nice to be back.
Right?
Yeah, nice. I've been on
again,
another
Mike.
Station for the last couple weeks, but hey, nice to be back here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Sorry, I know.
I'm
aware. You said that publicly, Mark.
It's cheating.
I know. Yeah.
That's okay.
It's not you, it's me.
Yeah. So we have a packed show today. 2 hours is a ridiculous amount of time for us to try and do everything we want to do.
2 hours goes by so quick.
Yeah, you know, and I think we're going to have to sort of put the kibosh on requests today.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we can do it. Because we have two artists calling in to talk about their band, and we're going to play a single from each of them. Les is here with a wonderful presentation, as always. You know, that's a half hour, 40 minutes. And Mark's here, too.
Yeah, and I'm actually going to be a producer today because my father has a bunch of, not songs, a bunch of pieces. And I need to produce those, so I'll put that on my resume. It's all about me, of course.
Yes, and we have a couple of songs that you picked as well.
Yeah, what do we have, four
new
noise?
Yeah, we'll probably do that like the last part of the 10:30 section.
I'd like to briefly mention at the end that there's some more new noise that we didn't have a chance to play. All of a sudden, there's so much good music coming out.
Yeah, it's nice. Who would have thought?
Yeah. There was a bit of a lull a few years ago, but boy, things are picking up again.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So 9:02 in the morning, let's start with some new noise. We expect Julia Mark to call up, and we'll talk to her hopefully by about 9:15 about her full-length album debut release in Harvard Square's Passim on Wednesday night.
Passim, yeah.
And what a great place that is. She's a pianist and a vocalist, and it's just beautiful. So Julia, if you're listening, give me a call, and we'll get it all set up. After we play a couple of tracks, starting with this new one by the band Black Grape. This is called String Theory. WMFO Medford.
I'm looking. things won't happen to me. You say to me, don't be such a drag. I drive a wreck, but you're in a jail. How can you tell me how good things are?
On my ears, will you? the mess around. They're doing the mess around. Everybody's doing the mess around. Ah, everybody was juiced. You can bet your soul. They did the boogie boogie with a study roll. They mess around. They're doing the mess around. They're doing the mess around. Everybody doing the mess around. Shake your leg and do the mess around. I declare, do the mess around. Yeah, do the mess around. Everybody's doing the mess around. Now let me have it, there, boy.
Everybody, it's WMFO 9:17 in the morning. Oh, 9:18. See, it always happens to me.
Hey, it's 9:19.
Stop 9:20. It. Not, stop
wow,
it.
Time's flying today.
I know. Yeah.
9:21.
All right, so we got a lot to do. Mike and Mike here with the brothers Hurwitz, Mark and Les.
Brothers. Hi guys. Hello, brothers.
And yeah, and we have Julia Mark hanging on the phone. We're going to talk to her in just a second. But let me be polite, and I'll tell you what I played. Start off for once. I'll be polite. Black Grape.
Why start now?
I don't know, but I am. Black Grape, new noise for this first set of the day. New from them called String Theory. That was kind of cool, kind of 60-ish. Liked it a lot. Huh?
Oh, yeah. It sounded totally like mid-60s music.
It was
loved
really
it.
Good. Boomtown Rats after that from 1981's V Deep, or I think it's 5 Deep, actually, with a Roman numeral. Didn't fool me. It's up all night. Our friend Stupidity, all the way from Stockholm, Sweden, from their 2017 compilation, 10 Years of Stupidity. That was Yeah, 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 Walk a Mile in My Shoes. The Clash, of course, and just after that, from London Calling, Train in Vain, and the great Ray Charles right there from Hallelujah, I Loved Her So, that was Mess Around.
And you know what movie comes to mind with that song?
No.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Mm-hmm. When they're driving I'm so not a movie person.
Oh, well, we'll have to see it some night.
I don't know. Julia Mark, hi, are you a movie person at all? By any chance?
Am I a movie person?
Yeah.
You know, I'm bad at seeing movies. I always miss the boat.
Hi, Julia. This is Julia Mark, everybody.
Hi.
Welcome to WMFO. Hello. Yay. So
thanks
glad you're with
me.
Us. Hey, so, you know,
good morning.
It's really good that you said that about movies, because I was thinking about what I wanted to say to you at first, and I was going to tell you that you and I seem like the same person, except for the except for the obvious, which would be the gender. If you, I don't know if you're thinking of anything else, but you are a Boston girl transplant here, and I told you that I had a chance to play your single a couple weeks ago, and it's just beautiful, so I can't wait after we finish talking to just play that again for people. It's really, really great.
Thank you.
So, as I said, you're a singer, songwriter, and pianist now in the Boston area. And I'll quote how you describe yourself. You create lyric-driven, optimistically dissonant songs about life on the moon, loss of memory, shifting homes, and palindromes. So
there you go.
So that tells a lot. It's, you know, the whole thing about shifting homes. And the loss of memory I don't get, but I get that being transient and sort of I'm fascinated by this as well, having an idea about the way that spaces have existed forever but people keep passing through them. That's really interesting to me as well.
Yeah, definitely. And that's a lot of the inspiration behind the song that you're going to play, The Stranger Is You.
Mm-hmm.
This idea that, you know, in the song, it's a house that somebody has lived in for a long time, like a childhood home.
Right.
It gets sold and a new family moves in, and now it's their space, and suddenly you're a stranger to that space that was once a home to you. And I think that happens a lot, you know, in any kind of space.
Yeah.
Especially in a city where there's like hundreds of thousands of people moving through the same space in a single day.
And how about like over the eons, you know, through the centuries, people that have lived in that same space, like in Boston, this is such a cool mm-hmm. old place. And, you know, there's lots and lots of souls that have been here over the years. And I'm fascinated by that.
Definitely.
Right?
Yeah. It's fun living in an older city, you know, where I grew up, there wasn't as much history as here in Boston.
Well, you're from New Jersey. I mean, what is there?
I'm from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Where I'm from, a lot of cows.
Okay. And while you were there, though, you studied classical piano up until high school, as did I. See, so far, same person.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Alive.
Yep. And when I was in middle school, I had this awesome music teacher who was in a band and played piano, and I started to take piano lessons, jazz piano lessons, and so did you.
Very nice.
And mm-hmm. then I learned chord structures and stuff, and so did you. So again, we're like the same person.
Very cool. I like it.
Right. So here's where it changes. In 2013, you graduated from Wesleyan. I did not. So good old Wesleyan in Connecticut, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Indeed. Yeah. It's great. Loved going there. Great school.
Yep. Yep. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, actually, no. I mean, I don't know. That's okay. I don't have to go on about it.
So I was going to say that, you know, we have a couple other really talented people here, too, in Boston area, young artists like yourself, who also came from Wesleyan. So it seems to be quite a good place for artistic types. That's for sure. And your majors were very interesting, music and psychology, which really is sort of stuck with you in a big way.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, on paper, at least, you know, for my course listings, there wasn't a lot of crossover between the two. But I think in practice, there is a lot of crossover between them. I mean, they're all about kind of analyzing the soul and people's motivations behind things and trying to get in touch with our emotions and motivations. So
yeah, and the psychology of stage fright, kind of.
Yeah, yeah, it was a big one for me. I didn't really play any shows until I moved to Boston and sort of decided, I guess I have to get over my stage fright if I want to be a musician. That's sort of step
one. You kind of do. I mean, I'm kind of the same way too, but that's no surprise because we're the same person.
It was definitely, I think it's one of those things where once you just get over the initial obstacle of saying, okay, I'm going to do this, mm-hmm. then the more you play out, you know, the more comfortable you feel. And thankfully, it's a very supportive community here, so, you know, it doesn't feel judgmental, and everyone's very supportive, so.
And I'm sure that it really helps, too, the positive feedback that you get from playing for an audience.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Right?
And especially singing songs that are so personal to me, it's nice when people can connect with a story and come up after the show and say, hey, that reminds me of this thing that happened to me, or I went through the same thing, and so that's helpful.
So when you moved here after graduation, you started to go to local open mics, which is just a great thing to do. And you mentioned one of my favorites here, the Lizard Lounge. Mm-hmm. And you've had some great experiences there, as well as a great success. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
So I stumbled upon the Lizard Lounge open mic, just had heard about it. You know, I think it's sort of a little bit legendary around here.
Yeah.
Tom Bianchi is a great guy. I was running it at the time.
Yep.
And so I went to the open mic. Actually, the first time I brought my keyboard there, not knowing they had a piano there.
Mm-hmm.
every Monday night they have a competition, and if you win the Monday night, then you can go to the main event, which happens once or twice a year.
Yeah.
And I ended up winning the main event, which was just a kind of like a big stepping stone in my musical trajectory. It sort of gave me a step up to like work on this EP a couple years ago and just feel like, okay, I have some support behind me. I can do this. Give me a little bit more confidence.
Absolutely. It's got to be a big confidence boost to win that. And then you came out with that EP you just mentioned called Question Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Nice name, by the way. I like that.
Thank you. Yeah, a little pun on my name.
Just a little
Julia
bit.
Julia Mark.
But you recorded it like so many people do these days in the world we live in your friend's apartment.
Yep. Yeah, my friend Jeff Ong, who actually is from New Zealand, so he moved far away. But when he was here, he helped me record EP, which was awesome. And it's fun to work with a friend and just, but it was, you know, it's pretty low key. So this upcoming album is definitely, you know, it was a lot more involved and a lot more people were involved, which was cool.
Sure, sure. Now, I have a couple of guests with me in the studio who want to ask you a question or two. This is Mark. Sure. Mark, this
is
Julia.
Hey, Julia, how's it going?
Hi, Mark. Nice name.
Oh, thanks. Julia, Mark, and Mark. Yeah. couple questions. Growing up, who did you listen to on the pop end of things? Who were some inspirations for you?
Gosh, well, I guess, so I'm trying to think of the first CDs that I had. I had Billy Joel's Stranger.
Great
stuff. Indio Girls. I had Rubber Soul.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a Mahavishnu Orchestra CD randomly. And so, yeah, I guess that's it. And then I was like Norah Jones, you know, when I was younger, she was sort of coming onto the scene. Joni Mitchell, that kind of vibe. I guess that maybe going a little more in the jazzy direction, but. Yeah.
Well, she's a wonderful influence for anybody. And the piano, you know, the Billy Joel thing, you know, makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure, yeah. And who are you listening to today? Anyone who really piques your interest in the pop or the rock scene right now?
Gosh, well, I must say there's a lot of great local Boston people that I'm listening to. I know my friend Dan Masterson.
About
to release an album. He's also a piano player.
Yeah, he's been here.
Oh, great. Yeah, Dan's great. You know, I kind of don't want to get into all the Boston people because I just go on about it. Actually, I tend to listen to a lot of music that's kind of dissimilar from my own. Moses Sumney just came out with an album called Aromanticism that I've really been into. You know, he's a guitarist and a beautiful singer and pretty different from my own stuff. I don't know. Let's see. Emily Haynes. She used to be the singer for Metric, who I actually didn't get that much into in high school, but... she came out with a beautiful album that I've been listening to, and yeah.
There's a lot of great local talent, that's for sure. I've been getting into local talent too lately. Just amazing, you know. You go to some of these clubs like Atwood's Tavern or Once or you know, Passim or Lizard Lounge or Toad, and actually, have you played any of those beside the Lizard?
You know, I played at Toad good one time, and my album release show is going to be at Passim this Tuesday.
Oh, that's a wonderful
great.
Space.
That's such a nice place.
Yep. Les, did you have anything you wanted to...
Yes, hi. My name is Les, and just to let you know that having taught music in college for 27 years, I have a couple of questions that come up based upon my reaction to what you have said, and one thing that intrigues me right off is primarily because I don't know what it means through your eyes, and that is when you mentioned loss of memory. Do you use that as a vehicle to propitiate some of your ideas? For instance, you know, I was thinking of someone I'm going to speak about today when I have my piece, and that's Oscar Levant, the humorist. I don't know if you've ever read his stuff, but he was a great Gershwin player and a great humorist at the same time. And one of the books he wrote was called, and get this, I mean, this tells you the kind of humor he had laced with what you mentioned by the words loss of memory. And the title of the book is Memoir of an Amnesiac. Go ahead and try to write a book like that.
That's a great title.
Yeah. So what I'm asking is, do you lace humor of any sort or any lightheartedness into things that are deeper at the same time?
I do, yeah. I mean, some of my songs are pretty serious, but I don't know. I tend to, like, if something is getting a little too dark, I try to make it lighthearted. I actually have a song on the album called See You on the Moon that's about, it's like an apocalyptic song about the world ending, but it's pretty upbeat and goofy, and so I try to balance that. You know, don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole with getting sad about stuff.
Right.
And I guess that's where the optimistic dissonance comes in. Yes, my kind of, the music might be a little dissonant, but the lyrics are a little sillier, vice versa.
Right.
Are you more active as a composer or as a performer, or is it pretty much the same or what?
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much, whenever I'm performing, I'm playing my original stuff. I also, I sing backup vocals with the Ruby Rose Fox Band. Mm-hmm. So that's another little project I'm involved in. But definitely when I'm playing, like, you know, my own gigs, it's all original music.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And the...
I'm interested in what you have to say because Mike, who knows a lot about music, and most of the time exhibits really pretty good judgment, has a high regard for you. And just one other question, just so that I have a little better perspective about your entity, and that is, when you went to school at Wesleyan, did you major in piano? Let me ask you this one last question, then I won't bother you anymore. upon graduation or thereabouts, and that at that time, how far in terms of repertoire did you get? What were you last working on the piano when you left Wesleyan?
Well, so the music major at Wesleyan, you can go a bunch of different directions with it. Mm-hmm. It's not really a conservatory-based program, so I kind of went down the ethnomusicology route instead of more like an anthropological study of music. And so, you know, I was on my own working on my tunes, and I guess my final performance at Wesleyan, which was the one time I had to get over my stage fright because I was like, I have to do this. It's a requirement.
Yep.
I performed a bunch of my original music with a bass player on campus. And also, I was taking American Sign Language. So I translated some of the lyrics into American Sign Language and had someone signing along with the songs.
That's interesting.
So that was my final project. So the last thing kind of left off on.
Very cool. All right.
Yeah. I mean, well, again, thank you for the answers, and I defer to the greater man here. And nice talking to you, dear, and I wish you the very best.
Thank you so much.
I think less means me as the greater man. All right. So very, very excited. You know, your first full-length album. And you did it with a Kickstarter, which is the way to go these days. And I took a look at that, and it was a great success. Congratulations on that! And it's finally coming to fruition, right? It's called Gemini, and at the beautiful Club Passim on January 30th, which I think is Wednesday of next week.
Yep, it's on Tuesday night.
Yep. And and you're going to play all 12 tracks.
Yep, we're playing the whole album with a full band.
Oh, how exciting. How exciting. All right, so the debut single that I just love, Julia, I can't wait to play this. It's called The Stranger Is You. Before I play it and we say goodbye, tell us a little bit more about the thought behind that song.
Yeah, so, you know, it's a song on the surface, the layer one metaphor is about leaving a home that you lived in for a long time and just that experience of becoming a stranger to a place that was once your home. And then in a broader sense, I think what we were talking about a little before, where you can kind of, this phenomenon where we move through spaces and then we leave them. And I think songs are kind of like that too. You know, we listen to someone else's song and it sort of becomes ours. And we ascribe our own meaning to it, just in the same way that we might move through a space and feel something totally different than somebody else in that same space.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the instrumentation, it's you playing keyboard on this, and tell us about what else is going on.
I borrowed my bassist, Forrest Pentengill. He has a Wurlitzer, so there's Wurlitzer on this track, which is super fun.
Yep.
David Brophy is playing drums, Forrest is on bass, and my friend Joanna Schubert sings a bunch of awesome harmonies, and then John Escobar is playing some organ in the background as well.
Okay, and John was your producer, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Fantastic. Well, listen, thank you so much for taking the time today. I'm going to share this song with all of you right now. This is The Stranger Is You, the single from the upcoming album Gemini. And Tuesday night, Julia's going to be over at the wonderful Club Passim. Congratulations and good luck with that, Julia. And you have an open invitation to come here to Fabulous Studio A. And we'll talk more and you can play for everybody. I'd love to do that sometime.
Great. Thanks so much, Mike. Thanks, everybody.
All right. All right. We'll talk to you very soon. All right. Thank you, Julia.
Care.
One more time. Thank you so much. And we're going to hear the beautiful The Stranger Is You
at WMFO. The wooden floors, the painted walls, the ghost of you dancing down the daylit halls. Somebody knew was standing here. And take their calls, and when I'm driving by, maybe I will stop to pause and remember it all.
Mm-hmm.
days until the sun was clearly well past gone. We wore our secrets on our sleeves and we'll believe the slightest breeze was something we could build a story on. And will they mount a maple taking up the view, or will they call a crew to cut it down? No, I didn't know about this moment till it showed up in our doorway. I'll be leaving. And because it grows a too bright white, I wonder if we'll find the letters we would write of conversations we recorded placed between the wooden boards at night. And will they keep the color in the kitchen, or will they be switching every room around? No, I didn't know about this moment till it showed up in the doorway. I'll be
WMFO Medford 938. Well, almost 938, 9 in the morning. Mike on the mic here. So pleased to share that with you. The Stranger Is You, the upcoming single from Julia Marks, full-length LP called Gemini. It's music and lyrics by Julia Mark, produced and engineered right here in Boston by John Escobar, with the record release party happening in Halford Square on Tuesday night at Club Passim. Go see Julia if you can. Full band, going to play the full 12 songs. And that gives you a little taste right there, just how wonderful that is. Julia, thank you so much. Can't wait to meet you and have you come in here to Fabulous Studio A sometime soon. Okay, at 9:39 in the morning, glad to welcome our friend Les Hurwitz once again to wow us.
Well, I'm not sure I'll wow you. If I do, it'll be very small W wow.
Oh, no.
at any rate, what I'd like to discuss with you is something that isn't bandied about among those of us called musicologists, and that is to take two composers who are so disparate and so opposite in terms of culture and the music style that comes out of it and all that, but to tell you about the parallel powers that they had at extremely young ages and how they changed the course of the history we call the history of music. And the two antagonists or protagonists are Mozart and Gershwin. Now, Mozart, of course, comes right out of Salzburg, Austria, 18th century, and Gershwin, of course, into the 20th century of the streets of Brooklyn. And I mean, how more opposite can you get than that? What I'd like to point out is the incredible powers that they had at extremely young ages that changes, the averts the direction of their particular roads along the that road of history. I'm going to start with, and I won't monkey around at all, we'll just get into it, and then between each of these very short pieces you're going to hear of Mozart, I will explain to you what you're hearing so that the impact of what you're hearing will come through. Why don't we just listen to that first piece and then I'll talk. It's called a minuet. I won't really give you the titles because we're not really sure about titles, but it's a minuet because it's in 3/4 time. Now, the piece you just heard was written by Mozart at the age of 5. Now, just think about what you're about to hear. The next 3 short pieces, all by Mozart, were written during the same period. He was age 5. The power of that reality is that it's more than possible that he was writing music before he could write his own name. Now, I want you to hear the next piece that he wrote, which is Kochel Listing 2. Kochel is for K-O-C-H-E-L, is a cataloger of Mozart's music. And there's a number after each of Mozart's pieces written throughout his career, preceded by the letter K. So this is K-2 by Mozart, and then I'll discuss it. Imagine a kindergartner writing a piece of music like that with absolute and perfect form. We know, of course, his father was a pretty well-known violin teacher, pretty well-known in his district, and obviously did some correcting. But we do know through forensics and through handwriting techniques that this is Mozart's own creation. And the pieces that you're about to hear are truly little Mozart's pieces. Why don't you listen to K-3 by Mozart? Thank you. Consider, too, that little Mozart could not only write this sort of thing at this age, but could play these pieces. What you just heard is what he could play, let alone write, at that age. Why don't we hear the last of these four pieces? This is K number 5. To hear these pieces, and many of you people who learned piano or are learning piano may have come across and actually learned some of these pieces. They're part of the repertoire. And little Mozart, age 5, gives us these pieces. You know, the talent of a Mozart, well, let's put it this way. Andre Previn, one of the really great and well-known musicians of our day, said that it is almost inconceivable to consider that the likes of a Mozart will reappear anytime. And you know, it sort of gives me an idea of the kinds of attainment levels the human animal can achieve when we think of, you know, if you go to sports, for instance, how about Ted Williams? 406? What was it, 1941? Mm-hmm. Are we going to see that again? Or Babe Ruth's 60 home runs in it with a dead ball and a stick rather than a bat. There are certain things that we just don't expect. Oh, Joe DiMaggio, how about 56 games in a row without losing a hit, at least one hit per game for 56 games in a row. These are things that we'll probably never know about again. Mozart falls into the same category. We have other great musicians, of course, at extremely young ages, coming up with great attainments, but nothing to the level of Mozart. Now, we're going to go to a longer piece by Mozart. This is his first symphony. Now, just consider the word symphony, a piece written for orchestra. He had the knowledge of being able to write for the instruments that are included in his orchestra. This first symphony, with a knowledge of the instrumental writing that's inculcated into this piece, And the idea that a symphony, which is a multi-movement affair, in this case three separate movements, takes quite a while to hear. We're going to hear only 1 or 2 minutes of the first movement of the first symphony. Mozart wrote this at age 8. Listen. just a portion of the first movement. Consider that Mozart at this age was already delving into instrumentation, into the vocal, and by the way, let's involve ourselves with what will be the final example of Mozart's greatness at such an early age. Think of the word opera. Oh, of course, the word comes from opus in Latin, meaning work. An opera, as we know it, is really a drama set to music. But an opera is more than that, too. We have costumes, we have sets, we have actions. It's a play set to music. And, of course, a libretto, which, of course, is the book upon which the opera is written. The name of the opera. For instance, in this case, the name of the opera is Othello from Greek legend. And Mozart took this as a music drama, set it to music, and we are going to hear the first section of the first part of the opera of Othello, written by Mozart, with what was involved with a boy soprano. He wrote this opera with the boy soprano voice being involved most of the way through it. Now, the sound of a boy soprano has a purity that we just don't hear in any other singing. You're going to hear a boy soprano. He was born in 1972. This is a relatively recent recording. His name is Alan Bergius, B-E-R-G-I-U-S, from Austria. He's 11 years old, or was 11 years old when this album was made. And he is one of the chief boy soprano singers in the Othello opera written by Mozart. Mozart was commissioned by the Benedictine University in Salzburg, Austria, to write this music drama as part of a group of events. Can you imagine being commissioned by a college or university at the age of 11? Let's listen to the purity of this just for a little while. Greek mythology, and in doing so, involving himself with bringing it into life through music, the music he wrote for this thing at age 11. I just want you to know the kind of power that this little boy had. By the way, by age 8, he was already known in Italy, Germany, France, and even England for his performance abilities, going through these countries, two piano playing with his older sister at the really old age of 12. Her name was Nannerl. Can you imagine Wolfgang, little Mozart, age 8, and his older sister playing keyboard throughout Europe? So this is the power of Mozart. Haydn, who, of course, Joseph Haydn, Papa Haydn, the great symphony writer, was born in 1743. Mozart was born in 1756. Mozart lived only 35 years, and Haydn would long beyond that. So what actually happens is, and in actuality, Haydn was one of Mozart's teachers, but in a sense, Mozart becomes the teacher of the teacher by dying very young, and the extension of Haydn past Mozart's time created a sense of knowledge given to Haydn through all of the great music that his student had written. This just has never happened since that particular time. The student becomes a teacher, and the teacher, in turn, is the teacher of the former teacher that he had had. Now we're going to go to the disparate other side, George Gershwin. Here's a fellow who dropped out of school at age 15, a rough-and-tumble youth playing baseball on the streets of New York. And, you know, as an educator, I can say this with some humor. The genius will come through in spite of, not necessarily because of education. I think of what Mark Twain once said. He said, "The genius is always there, but sometimes education gets in the way." So this is the kind of thing. Gershwin, in spite of everything, becomes a Gershwin we know. And we're talking almost a century now. What we're going to hear of George Gershwin, and there's an amazing story about George Gershwin besides the music, just like the sort of thing that you heard in the Mozart. The Mozart music is there. See, you can hear it all the time. But to know about some of the things I mentioned to you, very few people realize the kinds of mind Mozart exerted. Gershwin falls into the same category. What we're going to hear first is preceded by a happening on a bus in a street in Brooklyn. We don't know where he was going. Gershwin was 19 years old. He sat down in the bus, had some manuscript, started writing a song, and by the time he got off the bus and into his little apartment, the song was finished. Age 19, the song was Swanee. Swanee was written at age 19. And Al Jolson, a very famous singer of the time, and by the way, let's put Al Jolson into perspective. Jolson really was such a popular singer of his time. He really was the first crooner. And he definitely influenced the career of Bing Crosby, who in turn was a crooner-influence of people like Ella Fitzgerald and Frank Sinatra. I want you to hear Al Jolson sing Swanee, written by a 19-year-old composer who, within a year, became the world's most powerful composer financially and in terms of popularism because of the name we call, the song we call Swanee. It is heard today, and this is a recording made in 1920, only months within the time that this was written. Jolson put this into a review that he was completing called Sinbad. Listen to Swanee, written by the 19-year-old Gershwin.
You're listening to WMFO, Medford.
I've been away from you a long time. I never thought I'd miss you so. Somehow I feel your love was real. Near you I long to be. The birds are singing, it is song time. The banjo's strumming soft and low. I know that you yearn for me too. Swanee, you're calling me. Swanee, how I...